soft old dogs, chocolate croissants, new sneakers, an honest discussion, a few laughs, without winning or losing. Sure, we have to pay the rent, but if we work together, the light up Lotus.
Hi, this is Mark Ruffalo, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
Wayfarm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wayfarm and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Mohicanitta, the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, arthouse films, live music, and more, plus advance notice of close-up series conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Saugerties, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org. That's upstatefilms.org.
Wayfarm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Ben and Zynga in Hudson, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Good evening. Thank you for joining. I am Kimberly Y. Irwin, your host of Race Talks on WGXC 90.7 FM, a wayfarm.org enterprise. Here every third Tuesday of the month from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. EST, that's Eastern Standard Time Zone. And I have to mention that because now we have listeners from across the globe. This is where we have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. And why talk about race, you may ask? My answer is simply to combat racism. Education is key and discussion a must. And that's just what we're here to do here on Race Talks, where
no topic is taboo.
Well, that chorus of voices you hear is the people who are in the studio right now. Garrett Roche, who is the former WGXC programmer and now our current production assistant, as well as the number one fan of Race Talks, and the host of his very own podcast, The Roche Solid Truth, where positivity is at its purest. He's here to help, along with this evening's special guest talker, Heidi L. Hill. We'll get to talk to you more about Heidi Hill, who has fabulously joined us today. I'm so thankful that she's actually in the studio on time. Woohoo!
Be here.
And she says she's very happy to be here. Wonderful. Okay, so our segments today are a lot because we are celebrating Black History Month. February is the month where we celebrate Black History Month, but we're also very assured that this is not the only month in which we are to celebrate Black History. We celebrate Black History every day. Of course we do. But specifically on this show, we're going to talk to you about some words of wisdom. We're going to have some talk terms like enslaved Americans versus American slaves. DYK, did you know about the Buffalo Soldiers? And, of course, we're going to end the whole show with Right Acts. And so, in sharing with you some really great upcoming events that you can join and memberships that you can be part of. And we are lucky to be here on WGXC, a Way Farm enterprise, where this is a community-organized studio and station. And we're going to have a pledge drive. And so throughout the show, you'll hear our very fabulous speaker and former host, Garrett Roche, who will share all the information how you can be successful in supporting not just this show, but we're thankful that you will, but all of the fabulous and entertaining and informative shows that are available as listeners to WGXC 90.7 FM. So anyway, Garrett, please share with our listeners more information and how indeed they can be supportive of us here on at this radio station.
Absolutely, Kimberly. It's my pleasure and honor, dear. Thank you so very much. How the listeners can contribute is as follows via several ways. They can go to WGXC.org and click the red donate button up in the top left-hand corner. Or they can call 518-697-7400. Or do the old-fashioned snail mail, like I do a lot of handwritten letters to pen pals. They can post it to WGXC, care of Wave Farm, P.O. Box 13, ACRA, that's A-C-R-A, New York, 12405. And this is our lucky 13 pledge drive for WGXC, having been on the air here in Hudson, ACRA, and Catskill for 13 years. So we're making 13 the lucky number here. This is a pledge drive for positivity and connectivity.
Garrett, can you please share with the listeners, too? You are really supportive of this show and a fan of this show, but there's other shows at WGXC that you love to listen to. What are some of the favorite ones there?
I am so grateful for the platforms that have been open to me on this station since I made my first debut June 13, 2016, on the Monday afternoon show with host Kieran Riley and his occasional co-host Rebecca Borer, broadcasting remotely from the Spotty Dog on Warren Street here in Hudson. And I'll never forget them opening up that platform to me the day I walked in there to have an iced tea. I have also been welcomed on shows such as Pastor Kim Singletary and co-hosted by Randall Martin on the Tuesday afternoon show. And then we have Tommy D and Sheila G on the Thursday afternoon show. So that's just an incredible, excellent example of the true team and community spirit that WGXC as a wholesome platform has been providing now for 13 years in Columbia and Greene counties.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing. And you know what? Pastor Kim Singletary is one of my favorite guests on the show, and so I definitely love listening to her, too. I mean, she actually has two shows on WGXC, so wow.
Indeed. Sunday mornings as well.
Very good. So that's two times the show. So what I want to show right or have the listeners hear right now is one of the most informative, I found, shows or movies, I should say, of 2023. I just recently heard of it. It's called Surrounded. And I'm just going to play an intro of Surrounded because I think it really helps with our very bold theme today, which is in celebration of Black History Month. Celebrating Black History Month, exploring how Black history is indeed American history. So listen to the intro of this movie. Five years after the end of the Civil War.
I never knew why we prayed so much growing up. Till one day them Union boys came to my plantation and told me and my folks we were free. last day of our lives. Mama said our prayers have been answered. I remember me and my folks walking out that plantation till our feet couldn't even feel the ground no more. We just kept walking. Kept walking, but we had nowhere to go. We were free. But we had no place to be free. So I'm asking you, Lord, protect me on this journey. Help me reach my piece of the promised land.
Okay, that was the intro to the movie Surround It. And I wanted to play this because when I first watched this, I was very mesmerized by the fact that this was a story of a woman who was a formerly enslaved woman and pretended to be a man so that she could actually rise out of slavery and earn some money so that eventually she would be able to buy some land. And it's a tale of just how far some people had to go to achieve some type of success after slavery. Slavery ended in 1865, and in 1866, this group called, well, it was so named the Buffalo Soldiers because a black regiment or several black regiments were formed so that black people could, in fact, join the army and then help with keeping down the Native Americans in certain areas that were fighting the incoming Western movement to settle lands. And they also actually were able to help the settlers who were traveling out to be safe. So they were really integral, a strong part of what made the West open up and work. And these are stories that we don't really hear when we think of Black history. We think of the people who are coming out of slavery who had aided others to come out of slavery, but people who just did regular, what we would consider regular work, we don't hear from that much. And again, I thought this was a very interesting topic to discuss because we want to do more than just note the enslaved populations. We really want to highlight the successes and then and how very much support that they gave to those who they were either enslaved by or ended up working for after slavery. And I also wanted to share this because our first guest talker, who I'm about to announce right now, this is what I wanted. This is why I wanted to bring her on, because I attended one of her presentations at the Hudson Area Library, and it was unknown to me that there were so many enslaved people in the state of New York. One reason is because we are not really familiarized with slavery in the North. It was stated when we were growing up, if you were growing up as a, I want to call myself a millennial, but I think I'm Generation X. but growing up in the 70s in grade school, I'll put it that way, I knew slavery existed. I knew that there were enslaved people who escaped slavery, and that was basically the big deal. And slavery is mainly in the South, and that's why the Civil War was fought, because the North wanted to end slavery, and slavery wanted to be, and people in the South wanted to have slavery continue. And that was the basis, the basic idea. But there was slavery in the North, and particularly in New York. And there's many trails that you can take to find out how people came from the South to the North and were freed, but then had to go back into slavery because of Northerners who basically told on them and said, hey, we have some slaves here. And then some slaves were able to be freed, and some then remained in New York State also. So the one person I heard from that shared a lot of these stories, or a particular story that was of interest, that was historical, and it came from a founding father. So I'm going to have her tell you all about it. But who is she exactly? Heidi Hill, my esteemed guest for the evening, is a curator who holds a degree from both Binghamton University and the Cooperstown Graduate Program. And I say curator, but she's a historic site manager at Cralo and Schuyler Mansion State Historic Sites, located in the Hudson River Valley. She has a deep commitment in preserving diverse historical narratives and actively dismantles traditional ones, fostering inclusivity for all cultures represented at the sites. And again, I have her here because she's going to share some really amazing stories for general Black people who were enslaved. And for over two decades, she has this inclusive approach that demonstrated through her innovative exhibitions and engaging programs that she's able to successfully draw a wider audience to these sites. I want to also mention that central to her impactful leadership is her firm belief that in the transformative power of diversity, showcasing the profound impact achieved by acknowledging and honoring the complexities that are inherent in our shared history. So I want to let her share maybe some more additional interesting and maybe even fun facts about herself in the next few moments. And I want to right now welcome my wonderful new friend, Heidi Hill. Heidi, please tell the listeners of Race Talks right now a little bit more maybe about yourself that I haven't stated, and what brings you to want to share some of the information that you've garnered over your time on Race Talks.
Sure. Thank you, Kimberly. I worked at Cralo in the 80s as a tour guide, and there was a brand new exhibit there on the Dutch. And it was a great exhibit. Everyone thought it was wonderful. There was new research on the Dutch because of archaeology and because of translations of Dutch documents. I went away to graduate school. I went to Connecticut and worked for a few years. Then I worked at other historic sites in the Hudson Valley, Olana and Claremont. And then I came back to Albany and Rensselaer and worked at Cralo. What was it, 28, 29 years later, and the exhibit was still the same. The exhibit, again, gave lots of history on the Dutch, and there were three floors of history on the Dutch, and just one little panel on Indigenous people. Now, we all know that the Dutch wouldn't have succeeded here if it hadn't been for the Indigenous people. And so all of the staff really felt that we needed to really overhaul this exhibit. And it was timely because the quadricentennial of Henry Hudson coming up the river in 1609 was happening in 2009. And so we did our exhibit over, and all of us agreed that our focus needed to be on Native Americans, Indigenous people. So we took years to teach ourselves. We took years to partner with Indigenous people, both Algonquin people, including the Mohicans, as well as Haudenosaunee people. And we thought that we had done a fabulous job. One day I hosted journalists, one from Toronto and one from Philadelphia, gave them the grand tour, and at the end, the lady from Philadelphia, who was a Black woman, said, "Well, this was a great tour. I really enjoyed it, but I write for people who look like me. What do you have for people who look like me?" And I was like, "Oh, no." Yeah, so she was my inspiration. And, you know, there were four of us working in the museum. There were four of us. We were all white people, and I knew that we couldn't go it alone. We had to find scholars or a grant or something, and we didn't know how that was going to happen. And luckily, we had a PhD student on our staff who was getting lots of academic materials across her desk. And she found out that Yale University was offering this grant to museums to develop some sort of project on Black history. It was done in conjunction with the Gilder Lehrman Center for the Study of Slavery, Resistance, and Abolition, as well as the Smithsonian Museum of African American History and Art that hadn't even opened yet. Lonnie Bunch and others came and helped us through this process. We were selected. I need to tell you that much. Only 5 museums a year were selected worldwide, and Little Crelo in Rensselaer was selected to do an exhibit. So they helped us along with this exhibit and workshopped it with us. But in addition, we also had Yale history professors giving us history lessons on the history of slavery and civil rights in America every day. And it was, you know, I felt that I knew a lot about this. I felt that I was very open-minded, and I really didn't have to move the needle very far. But wow, my eyes were opened so much through these history lessons that we knew these things, but they laid it out systematically. They showed us the history of slavery and the history of legislation in America that was put in place to keep people out of power and to keep those who had the power in power. And it was a pretty powerful thing. At the beginning of the week, David Blight, who ran the program, the civil rights historian, he's the most recent author on the most recent Frederick Douglass biography, he held up a picture of Trayvon Martin at the beginning. It was 2013, so just a year after Trayvon was murdered. And he held that picture up and he said, "This is why we are here." And those history lessons showed exactly, you know, where we're at today and how slavery has impacted race relations today. And, you know, it was personally a very moving week for me. It changed me a lot. It really changed my career. And everything since then has really been because of that week. And yes, Black history is so important, and we've got so much work to do there. But our whole history is really the only history that we should be doing. You know, history doesn't make sense if you leave all of these other stories out. You know, we all grew up with these, you know, hero stories of George Washington and even Philip Schuyler.
Cherry tree.
Yeah, right. You know, and you knew all of those facts. I was actually around in 1976, and, you know, I had to dress up in the little Betsy Ross outfit, and it was all those few facts that you knew, but you knew that these guys were the heroes, and that was a story. And if you really start picking that apart and looking at it, it just doesn't make sense. These people aren't actually humans if all they did was these fabulous deeds. And of course, now we see that they were enslavers. They were town destroyers, as the Native Americans called George Washington, still call George Washington, and also call Philip Schuyler, the man who built the home where I work, because Philip Schuyler was the designer of the Clinton-Sullivan campaign that helped wipe out Seneca and Onondaga people in western New York so that the colonials, now independent from Great Britain, could move west.
And that's what I mean. I'm sorry to stop you real quick, but that's what I meant when I said they're founding fathers. But for us, they're founding fathers. But for others, there's other terminologies, like with the Native
people. Right, yes. And of course, you know, we gained independence. There were important things put into place, but it was freedom and liberty for only certain people, the haves, not the have-nots.
Correct. Well, thank you. And that story is one of the stories that I remember you sharing at the library. So I'm glad that you revisited that story here. I wanted to take one moment out because this is a pledge drive time. And like Garrett mentioned, we are 13 years on air. I haven't been here for all 13 years. I'm surprised I'm here for longer than 1 year. I thought I was going to do 12 months, but I'm 36 plus months and counting. Woo-hoo-hoo. So, Garrett, I know there's more than the ways that you mention where our listeners could actually give, because this is a new time, so it's not just snail mail and even not just on websites. How else can you share? How else they may be able to share and partake of being part of this wonderful organization?
By all means, definitely. Thank you, Kimberly. Those two additional ways are Venmo at Wave Farm or PayPal. So again, happy birthday to WGXC. Happy 13th birthday. We're making 13 the lucky number here all the way by bringing together examples of what we have here this evening and by not just talking like the mainstream media does, which, as I say, the mainstream media's worst enemy is good news. This is about talking, music, singing, dancing, all the different varieties you hear at Wave Farm WGXC, and coming from my humble spirit and heart, actions resulting of the talk on WGXC, both within the radio station and outside of the radio station throughout the community, and hopefully to be an inspiration to the world as well. So please do pledge. Again, those other two ways are Venmo at WGXC or PayPal. Please make 13 the lucky number all the way.
Thank you, Garrett. Now it's time
More than welcome, Kimberly.
Now it's time for our segment, DYK, Did You Know? So I don't want to put you on the spot.
Uh-oh.
But now that we know a little bit more about you, it's probably an easy DYK. I don't know. Okay, so I mentioned earlier when I shared the intro to Surround It, why it was important for me to share that with you, because there was a woman and her name was Moses Mo Washington, and she was played by Letitia Wright in the movie. And it's the whole movie, it's a drama set during about 5 years after the Civil War, a Western, where this Buffalo soldier, Moses Mo, travels to lay claim to a gold mine. And I want to find out if you know, maybe, why the Buffalo soldiers were named Buffalo Soldiers. And I'm going to give you some time to think about it.
Well, I can only admit.
Wait, okay. I'm going to give you some time to think about it, because I'm going to share a little bit of background. In 1866, the end of the Civil War, six all-black cavalry and infantry regiments were created after Congress passed the Army Organization Act. And this is to have them, like I mentioned a bit earlier, to control the Native Americans of the Plains. And like Heidi just mentioned, Skyler here in New York State was controlling, in a sense, the Algonquin and the...
The Haudenosaunee, mostly. Yes, he was Commissioner of Indian Affairs.
Okay. So this is happening everywhere, and they were also there to capture cattle rustlers and thieves and protect the settlers who were going to the West in stagecoaches, wagon trains, and even the railroad crews. So I just wanted to take a little of that time to let you think. So it's
Well, it's not my period of expertise, the 19th century. I'm sort of rooted in the 17th and 18th centuries. But as I understand, the buffalo, the food source, was wiped out, right, in order to starve out Native Americans and move them.
Okay.
And I'm just guessing, is that
well, that
the
great
buffalo
answer.
Soldier? but is it correct? I don't know.
I'm going to share what I think, but I want to make sure other people in the studio and who's sort of on the studio, we still have our media assistant, Joey White. Joey, can you give a shout out? I think we're having technical difficulties there, so I think it's up to you. Do you have an idea, Garrett? Do you have an idea, Garrett, on why the Buffalo Soldiers were called the Buffalo Soldiers?
I have vaguely heard that name, that term. I don't per se, no. I'm
okay.
Digging deep in my mind.
Okay, that's okay.
I can't say I do.
We'll move on.
I love the Bob Marley song.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, so I was thinking myself, it's because of the wooliness
of the hair of the buffaloes and the Native Americans. Hairs are not really like black people's hair. So it might have been the first time they had seen hair such like that, and they can only reference it to that which they knew, which were buffaloes.
Possibly. Yeah.
But
I think we need to Google it. Because, I know that they were trying to kill the buffalo in order to wipe out the food source.
And that could be a good reason. So I was going to say we can have our media assistant, but she might not hear us. But we'll look for that.
Okay,
because
cool.
It's a do you know. It's not a yes, we do know. Right. So we're going to get back to that. But I'd like for you to continue, Heidi, sharing what visitors to the Schuyler and Crailo mansions might see because of the knowledge that you have, what you've put together.
Right. So, you know, many of our visitors are surprised, just as you were, that there was slavery in the North. And so we like to get that question out of the way right away. We start our tours in the visitor center, and we talk about the house complex. We no longer have the house complex. We only have the main part of the house. It didn't function without the support buildings that surrounded it in the back that were mostly kept from visitors' view. So we have a model that illustrates the kitchen, the room to mash meal in, the yard, courtyard, where repairs were made on wagons and things like that. And so we really focus on that immediately, and we start using names because we know the names of the people who were enslaved at Schuyler Mansion. So right now, then, visitors know that they're going to hear more about slavery. And they're going to hear about the people who were enslaved, just as they're going to hear about the Schuylers and Hamilton as they go through the mansion. So we integrate that in all of our tours. We have special programs like Pinkster. Pinkster this year will be May 18th. And Pinkster was a Dutch holiday celebrating the Dutch Pentecost, so many days after Easter. But it was a time when the Dutch in the Hudson Valley and also Pennsylvania and Delaware gave time off to their enslaved people, a week. And this became an African holiday. Yeah. So it was a holiday where African tradition really rose up, and it became less of a Dutch tradition and more of an African tradition. And it got so that many times the Dutch were giving a week off to their enslaved people just to prepare for the week of celebration. In Albany, there was Pinkster Hill, right about where the Capitol is now. And there are descriptions of these bowers, sort of stands that were erected to sell cooked goods from and handicrafts and things like that. Native Americans would also come and set up their wigwams and that sort of thing. So it was almost like a fair during the day, but at night it really became a true African gathering of community and family. And it was probably like a pressure cooker too. You know, after dark, these celebrations got very raucous, and so much so that after a while in the early 19th century, drumming was prohibited. Now, drums were central to this, but the drums were scaring people, you know. And I think it was 1811 that Pinkster was actually outlawed in Albany because it got so celebratory.
And this was at what period of the
This is
time?
In the late 17th century and throughout the 18th century into the very early 19th century.
So maybe it was ended to control the population?
Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely, yes. And, you know, at different times, you know, rules would be tightened, then they would be relaxed, and they'd be tightened again, depending on whether, you know, there was war going on. For instance, during the Revolutionary War years, the British very early on signed an edict that said, if you make it to our lines, we will give you liberty. We have one account of an enslaved person seeking freedom prior to the Revolutionary War. Seven tried to make it to the British lines during the Revolutionary War years from Schuyler Mansion. If you were enslaved and you were a carter and you were moving around or a carriage driver driving alone, if you didn't have papers from your master that said that you were on a official errand, you could be shot on sight.
And this belies the idea that there was no slavery in the North, because the very things that you are saying is what is recounted in stories of slaves or those who are enslaved coming from the South to the North. Mm-hmm. Frederick Douglass, for example, is obviously one of those that we talk about most because he was so, he had so many wonderful speeches that we mm-hmm. can, you know, remember, and especially like, what to us is your 4th of July? Because mm-hmm. that's not freedom
yes,
for us. That's
right.
freedom for people mm-hmm. who mm-hmm. are white and
right.
not the enslaved.
And the enslaved people, when they became free on 4th of July, did not celebrate that day. They celebrated the next day on July 5th. So there is a movement about where people will be asked to ring bells on July 5th all over New York State and other places as well. But, of course, we're coming up on the anniversary of 2027 of really manumission here in New York. So it was gradual manumission with the date of, 1827, here in New York State.
Heidi, you also sound like a historian.
mm-hmm. That's what we have the most fun doing, is the historical research. And we've done a lot of it. So interestingly enough, this research really started in the 80s and 90s. And they identified about 35 documents that had enslaved people mentioned in them. And those were transcribed, and they were put in a wonderful binder, and they were put on the shelf. since then, especially during the pandemic, we have brought together at least 35 more documents. And we're finding more all the time because we are collaborating with other historic sites. You know, these people were traded and sold between these wealthy families, and we're learning more and more by working in partnership with, you know, Schuyler House up in Saratoga, which is a National Park Service site, even with Lindenwald in Kinderhook, Martin Van Buren's home. Before he owned it, there was another family, and they enslaved people related to slaves at Schuyler Mansion. So we're piecing things together like a puzzle, and it's really, really paying off.
Well, I want to go into our next segment that mm-hmm. kind of hinges on a few things you just said. Words of what are terms, enslaved Americans versus mm-hmm. American slaves.
Right.
And of course, the terms change from time to time, like the how we call people. We don't call Native Americans Indians anymore. We don't call Asian Americans Orientals anymore. Mm-hmm. We don't call Black people Negroes or colored people anymore. And we have a sort of interdispersed term used by different people who would prefer African American maybe to being mm-hmm. Black, or some just Black because they're not technically African American because they're not American, especially if they're not of this country and came as an immigrant. However, this term really seems to me be due to ownership.
Right.
So that it's giving a type of space to say that people who are enslaved should not be defined by their state of being in America. So they were enslaved, but they weren't slaves, right?
Right. I think when we change the vocabulary, you're thinking first of the person rather than the institution. So a person who was enslaved is a person first. You know, they're a person first and they're enslaved second. And that then gives us the ability to really start thinking about that individual and their personal lives. You know, people come to our sites and they hear slavery and they're like, okay, their mind jumps immediately to the work that they did. But they don't think about the families that they had. They don't think about the friendship bonds that they had. They don't think about, the agency that they had. They could resist in different ways. They don't think about maybe even the joy that they had during Pinkster or the birth of a child or something like that. So we want visitors to think deeper about the people's lives. And we don't always know. So we do the research, we piece together as much as we can, but then we explore the possibilities.
Well, let me ask you, because like you're saying, historians like the history. They like to go back. There are a group of people who are saying, we don't want to talk about slaves, mm-hmm. those that, even if we say enslaved, those enslaved right. populations, that they don't want to remember mm-hmm. the negativity of it all. In fact, you know, one might say, why do we keep talking about it? Why do we keep harping on it? Can't we just move forward? Can we move forward in a positive way without knowing our history and recognizing that these enslaved populations were what made America what it is today?
Yes.
If you like what America is, it was because of these everyday enslaved people, right?
I think that's very important to remember. And again, you know, lots of people have defined this as hard history, and it is. We don't want to forget that for some people, this is traumatizing. You know, we are now doing a focus tour on the enslaved people at Schuyler Mansion called Hear Them Now. And it's running now in February, and it's really, really very popular. But we say at the beginning that some of this is hard to hear. And so if you need to step out, or if you need to leave the tour, we totally understand that. We are going to be talking about slavery, but more we want to talk about the people and we want to honor their lives. So, you know, there's not just that can we move forward without looking back, but don't we want to remember these people for the people that they were and the families that they had and the agency that they were able to find. So those are the things that we're focusing on.
Excellent. And we're going to be sharing more about what you can be doing or events you can be attending so that you can gain more knowledge and be part of this community of seekers mm-hmm. of historical relevance. Okay. And I am looking at Garrett right now, and he really wants to share some of the names of the people who are giving and donating. So he's going to take this time. I'm asking him to wait till the end to actually give the names. And not everyone who gives needs to be mentioned. If you want to be anonymous, then obviously you can remain anonymous. But he's going to do another statement about having an ability to utilize your funds to support the station and our community.
By all means, Kimberly, and I have an expression just to thank Heidi here very much, our guest. The truth may hurt at first, but what hurts one more in the long run is to never know the truth. Anyway, if you'd like to keep more of this discussion or so many of the other discussions going on WGXC, please consider, especially now that you make us happy for our birthday, 13 years on the air in Hudson, in Green and Columbia counties, Acre and Catskill as well. Please consider donations in the following manners. It is wgxc.org/donate. Click the red button in the left-hand corner. Or 518-697-7400. Or snail mail, WGXC, care of Wave Farm, P.O. Box 13, ACRA, ACRA, New York, 12405. And also, as I mentioned earlier, via Venmo at WGXC or PayPal. So please, please strongly consider donating to make 13 the lucky number and to make us all lucky for each other and appreciating and cherishing each other as human beings. And as I say, actions as the result of talk on WGXC, as opposed to just words.
Well, thank you, Garrett. And I'm sure that there'll be some names for you to shout out towards the end of the show.
Let's hope. Let's hope. Let's make it happen.
Okay, so this time is the right time for a roundtable discussion. And all that really means is that we get to share exactly what we want to share and not really stick to any scripts. Though I don't think we had a script. Did you have a script?
I didn't have a script, no.
All right, so we're going to open it up for whatever we want to talk about. So I think, though, I do want to maybe ask you, and then we can, yeah, I mean, anyone here, even Joey, who's now able to listen to us and be part of the conversation, who may also have something to add to our conversation. You were mentioning other organizations or museums maybe that mm-hmm. are part of your group. I just wanted to share that there is an opportunity for people to join also something called an event called Finding Julia. It's centering Black women in antebellum history. It's the discussion of the vice president's Black wife. And I hope I get this name right, by Amrita Chakrabarti Myers. And that's going to be Sunday, February 25th at 2 p.m. at the Kinderhook Memorial Library. You can go in person if you're around Kinderhook, or on Zoom. So you just have to register columbiacountylibraries@gmail.com. And I'll repeat that a little later when we go into right actions. But I just wanted to support what Heidi was saying, how there's lots of different entities that are showcasing this type of stories. Mm-hmm. Any more you want to add about Skylar?
Yeah, well, Prayla? Sure. Just another collaborative that we belong to. I don't really love the title. It's called the Northern Slavery Collective. It is a number of museums and researchers grouping together to bring their research to the table so that people can collaborate and, not have to keep doing research. It's all shared. And just a couple weeks ago, on February 5th, two other employees and myself went down to New York City and spoke at the conference about our children's program that we're doing with both the Underground Railroad Education Center in Albany and the Historic Cherry Hill. Historic Cherry Hill got the grant, an NEH grant, which is very difficult to get. And they brought us along, and we are doing this wonderful tour on the enslaved people at Schuyler Mansion for 4th and 5th graders, as well as 7th and 8th graders. And so here we're sharing this hard history with youngsters, but they are really grasping onto it because we're telling these personal stories. And we have 500 5th graders from Albany. All of 5th graders from Albany Public Schools are coming to see us over March, April, May, and June. This spring, we don't know quite how we're going to handle it all, but we're going to, and it's going to be great. So they do two activities during this program, and one is where we present the children with a family, Silva and her children, who all lived at Schuyler Mansion, and Silva's husband, Toby. And they learn a little bit about each one and their ages. And then they are able to choose a couple different items that might be associated with those people and talk about why they chose those. And they're always choosing a work object, but they're also very often choosing a musical instrument and a toy. In one case, tarot cards, because we think that once Silva became emancipated, she became a fortune teller in Albany.
Whoa.
We find her in the city directories as well as in the census in 1820 and 30. So she was probably the cook when she was enslaved, but now she gets to choose her work. and she's a fortune teller. So it gets the kids, and we actually use this activity during our focus tour now too, hear them now, gets conversation going about these things. And we ask questions about, you know, what did you find surprising? Or did you think about this kind of thing before? If you could talk with any one of these people, what would you ask them? You know, so it's been very successful. We've really had a lot of good dialogue.
Well, it really humanizes,
yes,
the enslaved population. Mm-hmm. And so it allows us to talk about them as not simply heroes, like we have to talk right. about our founding fathers as heroes, but as real people.
Mm-hmm.
Because certainly the many of our founding fathers, if not most, I would imagine most, were owners of enslaved yes. or enslaved mm-hmm. peoples.
Yes.
And so once we get older and are knowledgeable of that, we start then having a different impression about these people. But mm-hmm. if we are able, through workshops like yours, to know that people are people, they are positive and negative, they do positive and negative acts, and mm-hmm. that the enslaved people were not just enslaved and having to do the duty of someone else, but also have an agency, like you said, who was able to then support themselves and move forward. And this are the people that African Americans belong to.
Right.
And so when you look at a Black person now, you don't see an enslaved person. Who you see a person who gained agency and worked mm-hmm. very hard and diligently. And I think that's key to seeing the well-roundedness yes. of people. You know, we don't like books or movies if we don't see well-rounded characters, right?
Right. Right.
So why would we do something mm-hmm. like that in history to our young people?
Yes.
And it dilutes their ability to understand the truth mm-hmm. and be able to move forward beyond it,
right.
which I think states, unfortunately, like Florida, who, you know, are banning books. And I can't even imagine having an ability to do any kind of programs that you're, mm-hmm. you know, you're collaborating with.
Probably
others
not in
on.
School, at least.
Right.
So in that focus tour, we do focus on labor and expertise. So we do talk about labor because we want to talk about the skills. We know, for instance, Benjamin Franklin wrote to Schuyler and thanked him profusely for insisting that he take Lewis, this expert carriage driver, on the trip to New York City with him. He was going to borrow another sulky and drive himself, and Schuyler's like, the roads are too bad. You can't. You need someone skilled in driving a carriage. And he said that if had Lewis not driven him to New York, his bones would have rattled apart. So, you know, that's
and
just
I went to
one
UPenn,
example.
He probably wouldn't have made that university.
There you go.
That's an aside.
But that's just one example, you know, and there are so, so many. And I could go on, but I don't know how much time
we have.
Well,
you can definitely come back because we don't have that much time. Again, this is a really great time for a pledge drive, being that it's 13 years for the station. So we want to definitely give time for that. But before we do our last pledge and share the very people who have been, we are so thankful that did offer support during this show, I want to first thank Heidi, Ms. Hill here, for joining us and imparting such knowledge and in such an upbeat manner. I mean, I'm actually trying very hard to get into this yes. last Saturday yes. group. So am I going to be in?
Yes, you're
Yay!
In. You are in. And I should say quickly that we will also be offering Hear Them Now again in May and June. By reservation. So people do need to give a call first.
Okay. And all that information will be on my website. That's www.KimberlyErwin.me. I'll have all of Heidi's information there. I'll also have information about what's upcoming. I mentioned that we would talk about Right Acts. Well, one thing about Right Acts, it's to engage. So engage means you give of your time, you accept that you're not knowledgeable about everything and you want to learn. And you certainly are one to, I forget now, gauge with a J. Okay. And then you just do it. I think it's the J. Just do it. Take an act. Just join. Oh, yeah. Just join. Join, I think. So what can you do? You can join groups that are around that help you understand and be part of the communities. So we have a group, Africans Daughters of the Diaspora, who's having a wonderful women's event in March. So if you want more information on that, please look up the www.KimberlyIrwin.me website and ask me any question. I'll provide you all the information you need that we talked about today. And again, that other event that's discussing the Vice President's Black Wife, and that's Martin Van Buren Park Rangers, will lead a discussion of the new book that is written, Finding Julia. And that's information that you can also find on that site or ColumbiaCountyLibraries@gmail.com. And Garrett, I'm going to give you a moment to share all that wonderful, all those names, to give shout outs to those people who have supported not just Race Talks this hour, but also the entire station. And let you know that we're going to end after the pledge drive shout out on a musical number, Closing. And this is Lift Every Voice and Sing. I know people hear it all the time, but it was written by James Weldon Johnson who was born in 1871 and passed away in 1938. It's considered the national black anthem, but today we're going to share how a group of young people from Boston, of all places, which was considered one of the racist large cities in the nation. And for them to have young kids of all different ethnicities and persuasions to sing this song, I just want to share again what the words are, because sometimes people don't know the words. I'm not going to sing them to you, for you, but I will share them with you. And by the way, I went to Spelman College, and this was a song we had to sing every Sunday. So I pretty much know all these words, but I'm still reading them because I'm a little nervous about sharing them with everyone. Lift every voice and sing, till earth and heaven ring, ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. So again, I want to thank Heidi Hill for coming and being part of this wonderful conversation in our studio. And the shout out for the many people who support the station right now, go Garrett.
Thank you, Kimberly. Well, I don't know if anyone has ever thought about naming candles on a cake or not, but here we have WGXC's 13th birthday. I'm about to read the names of donors thus far. And some of them are actually familiar names to some of us, perhaps, but here we go. We have Virginia Martin. We have Anonymous. We have Mark Orton. We have Benjamin Cudler. And we have Galen Joseph Hunter. So let's double, triple, quadruple the names of these sparkling candles, please, on this 13th birthday cake of WGXC.
Thank you for that and your references. You're always so upbeat. Here we go.
WGXC.org/donate. Click the red button.
And thank you. This is Kimberly Irwin signing off for the Race Talks. Thank you for listening. Thanks, Heidi. Thanks, team. Love, beauty, joy.